just like uber busy. This is epic. So,
3, 2, 1.
I'm a stay-at-home dad looking after the newborn, and to keep him sleeping, I like to sing to him about
hacking.
Look, I love to relax with a good book, but the problem is I never read enough about
hacking.
Well, everyone's agreed to drop everything because it's 9:45, and Kirk and Andy have declared today's topic is
hacking.
It's Kirk and Andy's Hacking Hour.
Good morning.
Woo, they are ready.
Welcome to Kirk and Andy's Hacking Hour. We're blatantly ripping off Hamish and Andy's Happy Hour.
Absolutely so.
And today we're going to be talking about hacking, wheedling and cajoling.
Yes, we certainly will do. So thank you for turning up to this one this morning, people. It's slightly busier than we were kind of expecting. So probably about 15 minutes until we all overheat and all of the oxygen is removed from the air. So we'll kind of get it done in a 15 minute.
There's some room at the front if you want to sit on the floor. So.
And maybe, I don't know, I don't know how many people are out the back. I don't know if you want to open both the doors for a bit of oxygen flow, maybe. Okay, so.
Who are we?
I am Andy Prowell. I'm the Managing Director and Founder of a little crowd called Aura Information Security. So we spend our busy days hacking, penetration testing, code reviewing, and doing securely related stuff over in New Zealand.
Securely related?
Securely related stuff.
Cool, and I'm Kirk, so I work at Xero, which is an online accounting software product headquarters in New Zealand, lots of customers in Australia, and I've worked with Andy for...
Andrew, that works.
7 years or something like that.
Far too long.
Ever since we got our first security reviews done by Aura and a brief sojourn working for him at his company. So we're over from New Zealand, so we often do these hacking talks at TechEd New Zealand. This year we're excited to come and do it here. Less excited about the food poisoning that I had yesterday, but but still excited to be here nonetheless.
Exactly. So, and I guess relevant to the pickies that we've got up there. So, for those who are also going to be at 11:30 for our security spidey senses. So, I guess the personas. So, obviously, I am the superhero, and I'm a real fan of, you know, in life, be yourself, unless if you can be Spider-Man, in which case, be Spider-Man. Kirk, of course. His hero is a blonde-haired geek. So basically, you are living the dream, mate.
Great.
So the plan of these sessions, right? So the idea of HackEd is when we're out there doing our security stuff, as we do, we find that's kind of the two ends of the spectrum. There's the coders and the people who just do solid, secure coding. And then you have the other 99% of people writing applications out there. And so, I guess when we look at the stuff that goes wrong in apps, sometimes it's hardcore. Most of the time, it's the basics. So, I guess one of our plans in life is to kind of spread the education word on cybersecurity.
Cyber.
Baby.
Is it cyber? Yeah, so what won't you get out of this is just an appreciation of some of the attacks that'll happen against your web apps and infrastructure and how common they are. So, we'll have a section where we talk about the news and stuff like that.
So yes. So do you reckon, are we winning the cybersecurity war?
Hands up if you think we're winning.
Oh, wow.
No one thinks we're winners.
No one. Unless if there were people on the dark side, in which case they'd be, yeah, I'm winning. So I guess, we just want to cover off like a little bit of news first. So news from around the world. So I guess the nature of cybersecurity is changing quite massively underneath our feet. And one of the first attacks... or issues. So this was an example that hit the US, and this was a massively expensive attack. But the payload itself was quite clever. This wasn't a massive, huge denial of service. This payload that caused this expensive US attack was 71 characters long. So this malicious payload that was sent to the attack site of 71 characters was worth quite a lot of money.
How much money?
That's a very good question.
Wow.
So a 71 character...
It's almost like this was scripted.
Attack. No, trust me, it's really not scripted. So 71 characters. So would you think a 71 character attack would cost like $1 million?
No way.
More. Do you think a 71 character attack would have cost more than, say, $71 million of damages?
$1 million a character,
doubt it. Yeah, no, more. So do you think this attack was $710 million worth of damages for 71 characters?
I guess it wasn't.
Yeah, no, more than that. So let's keep going up. Do you reckon it was worth over $1 billion of damages?
Yeah, okay.
$100 billion of damages?
Okay.
$136 billion of damages from 71 characters. And this hardcore attack even came in plain text.
It was a tweet.
So this was the classic tweet when the Associated Press Twitter account got hacked. And that knocked $136 billion off the Dow in around about an hour. So when you look at hardcore attacks, oh my God. So yeah, the 60 characters without white space. So that attack was actually worth $1.91 billion per character. Holy crap.
I bet you the Associated Press person that put a shitty password on their account didn't think of that.
I know. They might have got a spanking. So, okay, as you can see, it recovered quite quickly at the end there. But so that's the nature of the world today. 71 character tweet.
Barack Obama didn't die in an explosion.
Oh, did he not?
No.
Jeez, bro.
Yeah.
So I guess the... oh, bro. So...
politics, eh?
So I guess... So coming back
time for politics here.
Oh, man. Politics. Yeah, let's get onto that one later. So... So another couple of examples of stuff that goes on, you know, globally. So we just take these two, because, you know, LinkedIn, pretty obviously big US crowd. How many people here have LinkedIn profiles? Like, everyone. And so, of course, your data is very private.
Evil.
Back in LinkedIn. But earlier on last year, in June, of course, LinkedIn had their passwords extracted from the database. Again, pretty hardcore attack. This newfangled attack called SQL injection. And if anyone's heard of that, it originated in about the 70s before computers were really being used. And so SQL injection's been around forever, still here. So SQL injection attack stole 6.5 million passwords. Of course, they were nice and securely SHA-1 hashed, which is good.
Is it?
But they weren't very salty. So for those who don't know about salted SHA-1 hashes, then we'll talk a bit more about that at the next session. But let's just say they weren't salted, and therefore lots and lots and lots and lots of them were broken. And so out of interest, some of the LinkedIn passwords, you had things like LinkedIn was used 4,076 times as a password. Password was used about 5,000 times. So one of the biggest issues, as we all know, that we have in security land is our users. But apparently they need to use the system. Yahoo Voices was quite different, though. So they had, again, quite a different attack. This was SQL injection. I know. Okay, but this one, so Yahoo Voices, they stole 453,000 passwords, but they didn't have to break the SHA-1 hashes.
Because they were stored in plain text.
Oh, yes, they were. Plain text. So anyway.
Luckily, it was a Yahoo attack, so no one uses their product, so it's
fine. So, in fact, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
That's right.
They weren't real people, they were all spammers.
Yeah. They
it's not being recorded, is it?
Oh. Dude, you said that, not me.
Don't Microsoft own
you? You're getting the lawyers this time, dude. Oh.
Okay, anyway.
So closer to home, moving quickly along.
Australia, I've been there.
Okay. So we decided to look back over the last couple of years, what's on the stuff in the Aussie news. We're not going to go through everything because, I guess, coming from NZ, we kind of had some lofty aspirations that you guys would be getting security right. So we went searching through the news of hacks and failures over this side of the ditch. And so we've had to filter it down to the top, like, 10,000 issues that you guys have over the last couple of years. We filtered that down to... So First State Super back in October 11.
It was actually a couple of years ago, but it was quite a funny one. So security guy Patrick Webster was using his Super account, which apparently has nothing to do with superheroes, some kind of Australian thing. I don't know.
Really?
He was using his Super account, and he noticed that in the URL it had his account number, and he thought, oh, what if I change that? To someone else's account number. And he noticed that he could see other people, so he wrote a little bash script to prove it, sent it to the First State Super guys, who said, oh, thanks for letting us know. That's really awesome. Thanks for telling us about this massive security vulnerability. And he was feeling pretty good about himself until a few days later.
Yeah, about 4 days later, and the police knocked on his door. Oh, yeah, I know. Thanks for letting us know about security flaw. Let's just call up the police and get you done for it. So
that's how not to do it. So they have 770,000 members, all of which potentially were exposed.
And if this was New Zealand, we would right now talk about exposed members, but we won't because it's in the audience, so we're going to behave this time for a while. Oh, no, it's going to get hard, though. Oh, no. Dude.
The next one is Australia Post. So apparently these are some kind of antiquated, like, send an email, but you print it out on paper and put it in an envelope.
Yeah. I think it's because the distances are so big over here,
yeah.
And it kind of, like, goes on the plane.
Yeah, like, so I don't really understand weird. Their business model.
Yeah.
But
I don't think it's not going to take off. No way. So, but they had quite a different issue, didn't they?
Kind of. I mean, they basically had a website where you could look at your signature and tracking information for your parcels, and if you change the parcel number, you'd see someone else's tracking information and signature.
So, in fact, it was exactly the same issue.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yep. Also known as direct object reference for those people who have heard of that phrase. Anyone heard of that phrase? Well, you have now. So everyone's going, yeah, I just heard it like 3 seconds ago. Good. Excellent. Oh, yes. Can you do it at the back? Oh, no, hang on. I forgot. So, oh, yes. So hang on. Please hold, callers. We have chocolate that I, in fact, bought, unless if you go and check out, like, the little media room around the corner where half their chocolate's missing. social engineering. Come on. Two immediate chocolate bars. So the first one, in fact...
You're not going to get it, Tom.
I can try. Oh, no, I might kill some. Okay, here we go. Chocolate bar. Oh,
wow.
Almost. So, like, I think it's the difference in temperature, the humidity in Aussie. NZ, that would have made it, mate. That was easy.
We have different gravity.
Now, hang on, the other fella here. So, a fella over on the far left inside the glasses. Yes, you. You were the first fella in the room following us. So, well done on your keenness. And you're trapped in, so you're not going to be the first fella to leave. So, chocolate. Oh! They're small bars, so we shouldn't actually cause too much real harm.
Snickers, very satisfying. Okay, let's get on with the talk. So, hack number three.
Hack number three. We had to get something about the government in here. So, if we were in New Zealand and we're talking about IID, we'd get into trouble, but that's fine. But we're over here, so we can talk about your Aussie tax office.
So, this is also a business model that I don't understand.
No, it's
like they have a whole collection of honest, hardworking people, and then they steal money from them.
Exactly, and then pretty much siphon it out to the politicians and go figure. So
what did they do wrong? This was back in February this year.
Yes, it was.
And it turned out that they were emailing people their passwords.
Oh, hang on, emailing their passwords? Does that mean they undid all the salted show one hashing that they must have put in place first?
But
that doesn't work. So hang on, to email out your password would need it to be stored plain text. Oh, no, really? Oh, we'll move on from that. Plain text, but oh, okay. Don't want to make the Aussie government too angry, but no, another plain text offender, crikey. ABC Networks.
Oh, so who here watched a TV program called Making Australia Happy? This was just a sympathy hand going up.
Okay.
I think Australia's already happy. I mean, look at the weather.
I know.
Right now, back in Wellington, there's a storm.
Yeah.
The trampoline was blowing around in the backyard, and then there was an earthquake at midnight.
Exactly. It's like, we know really how to roll.
Yeah, my wife is so pissed with me right now.
Yep. Over here, we wake up, oh, it's sunny again. Shit, really? So ABC, so they had some passwords next. So how, 49,561, I reckon, off the top of my head.
Okay, whatever.
Okay.
So, yeah, that was an online forum for some TV show, and the passwords ended up on a hacking website
Postbin.
About 2 years ago. The hashes of them turned up there about 2 years ago, but people only really realised in February this year that that's where they came from.
Exactly. So, but one of the interesting they were unsalted SHA-1 passwords. So, out of the passwords, there's a fellow Troy Hunt. He's got one of the he's doing a prezo later on today as well. So he had it in his lab, one of these little AMD Radeon 7970 hardcore graphics processing units. The cool thing about that is you use those sort of GPU graphics processing units to break lots of password hashes. So that little setup did 4.8 billion password hashes per second is how many that can do. So when you're looking at, you know, how many passwords can it break, so it can try 4.8 billion MD5 hashes a second, or it can do 2.2 billion SHA-1 hashes. So as an example, it took him 45 minutes to break half the passwords out of the database. So when you're looking at hashed stuff, so you've got to put in concept. So using a machine like that, it takes, if you had 8-character password using uppercase, lowercase, numbers, and special characters, an 8-character MD5 hash can be broken, all of them can be broken in 42 hours on that kind of machine. So that's why MD5 is broken. That's why we don't use that these days.
And anyway, that's not even that fancy a setup, really, is it?
It's like commodity one box. Stuff. One box. So the NSA don't care about how big your passwords are because they just bought thousands of PlayStations.
I don't think ABC's not making those Australians happy.
So, Crown, we had to do this one. So this was earlier this year, wasn't it? April?
Oh, yeah, Crown Casino.
Oh, that just kind of looked fun. It was like an Ocean's 11 between the, a big high roller and...
Yeah, so there wasn't a lot of information about how this actually happened. The casino seemed like they didn't want to share too much.
Yeah, funny,
but apparently he got away with $32 million.
Exactly.
Which I think even in Australian dollars is quite a lot of money. Yeah. Apparently he had some inside help with the cameras in the casino so he could see what the other players were playing in their hands.
Absolutely.
And so he was able to bet accordingly.
So... hacking through surveillance. So I guess if you also look at the other one that I just thought was quite interesting back in June, so Google, they didn't really get hacked, but their Wharf 7 location in Sydney did. So some researchers broke into the building management system, just for a laugh. And I guess what that demonstrates is, we do like what you call red teaming. So the difference between, say, penetration tests is where we're trying to break your website or your wireless network or your iPhone app, because we're at the wrong conference for that, mate. Your Windows 7 Nokia app. So what they did for that one is broke into the building management system and therefore could gain physical access inside the building. So this is the classic old insider threat where now you can't trust your network, you can't trust anything on your network. So
it even happens to the best of us, Google.
So one of the ones, that's right. So I guess so the globes under cyber attack, so is Australia. NZ, we have a couple of issues ourselves over in NZ. We've had at least one attack. Or one security issue, maybe a couple more.
So in New Zealand, we have a version of eBay called Trade Me.
Anyone heard of Trade Me?
I think it might be a small player over here. But basically, it owns the entire auction market in New Zealand.
Absolutely.
And every few years, someone tries to set up their own auction website to compete with Trade Me. But Trade Me has basically 50% plus of New Zealanders using it to buy and sell
stuff.
Which
is what, 3,000 users?
Yeah.
So... Yeah. I know, exactly. There's like 3,000 servers at the moment.
So this is some rich guys did a big song and dance about how they were going to compete against Trade Me, and so they were going to build their own eBay auction system, and they had 40 servers, and they'd done all this development. And what date did they launch it on? October. I can't remember which day.
It could have been like the 11th of October it went live.
To big fanfare, TV ads, absolutely. Billboards,
huge.
Buses.
That's right. And on the 12th of October?
Just the regular old developers noticed, that's a little bit weird. Wrote a few blog posts.
Uh-huh.
And the site went offline for 6 months while they fixed all the security issues.
That is correct. So it was a big launch for 2 days.
And it's funny, when they relaunched in April this year, they didn't make nearly as much of a fanfare about it.
No, it was a very quiet effect.
They weren't quite as proud of how many servers they had. They weren't quite as proud of how many million dollars they'd spent outsourcing the development overseas.
And some of the popular things, so they had plain text usernames, passwords stored in the cookie on the local machine, which apparently there's better ways of doing that. They also, funnily enough, like a bunch of the other examples we've had, you could directly manipulate the URL. So if the URL contained the bid price of the auction you wanted to bid on and you changed it, then you could basically manipulate other people's auctions and the bid price and the buy now price and anything else you kind of really wanted. So they had a couple of minor glitches. Teething, I swear. What else we get over our side of the ditch? So we've had, for instance, the Met Service website had some issues a couple of years ago. This is in the... biggest storms that we had in Wellington at the time.
We had snow. It was awesome.
It was really cool, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the only snow I've ever had.
Yep, so all the schools are shut, and it was a bit of a laugh. But what was interesting is that the hackers chose that time to upload malware onto the Met Service website. So because everyone was really busy clicking in and seeing how the weather was going, that in fact the Met Service website was owning your machine if you had an unpatched browser, if you hadn't been patching your Java plugin, your
Adobe
Silverlight.
Reader.
Exactly. Oops. Yeah. Of course, we've had some political hacktivism the day before our general election. So I haven't seen any Aussie sites that have been dorked over today. But we had the Solid Energy, Coles of New Zealand website, turned from Solid Energy into Stolen Energy. So there was a bit of a greenie campaign. And what was, again, was quite interesting is that Greeny started tweeting about the fact that it happened about a minute after it got hacked. How would they know?
It was so convenient.
Interesting. Plausible deniability. So I guess the question there is that if you know if something that's been hacked, at least give it like 2 or 3 minutes before you start tweeting it to the world. Jeez. And I guess, and so, you know, I don't want to have too many slides up there, of course. You may have heard of that large German fellow who's probably going to be running for Prime Minister in the next few years, Mr. Kim.com. Over in NZ, and so we've had some issues there, and we've also got the GCSB spying issues. I don't know if that's something that's made news
over here.
You guys
are part of the Five Eyes as well, so you've probably been following all the spying stuff that's going on internationally.
It was illegal for the GCSB to spy on Kim.com, and so they had the choice of stop spying or change the law.
So, yeah, so the law
so we just a new law change. Yeah. Absolutely. Which is the easiest way to do it in NZ. It's like,
So apparently you're allowed to use the full might of the US and other Five Eyes intelligence network to fight terrorism and track down terrorists. Oh, and also look for guys that are stealing MP3s.
Yeah, which is pretty important. So pretty important. So anyway, so look, one of the other bits that we've seen a little bit of as well is search defacement. I don't know if any of you guys have had sites or systems that have come under this attack. This is quite cool. You've got a big... the world of search engine optimization. So this is the world of search engine destruction of the competition. So basically the point here is that you have your website hacked, and instead of uploading here what might look like it was just about to be rude adult content, instead what you do is you upload it in such a way that it's only visible to the bots.
Yeah,
so you put it in tags.
So it's display none, regular site visitors can't see it.
Absolutely so. So what we have here, so just so that we're quite clear, so what will happen is, say for instance, a organisation that gets owned in this way, then all of a sudden when you start searching for, say, things like Viagra, you will find the target site or porno movies. And the reason you find it is that the dodgy content is put in tags that are only available for, say, the Google bot, the Bing bots. So in other words, when it is crawled by the bots, it returns the dodgy content, links to... objectionable content. And so what it does is you'll suddenly find your site gets taken off the rankings because you're now adult content only. But if you go and view the site, and if your users view the site, nothing to be seen. So it's actually invisible, and you think your site's perfectly happy, but you've now been destroyed in the search results. So it's actually, we found that as quite a common.
What's that Ministry of National Development doing with Viagra? What are they developing? Strategically planning.
Strategic. And so, look, so probably the second to last one to cover off is some 3DOS. So, anyone heard of this 3DOS phrase? I guess who's heard of the DOS phase? DOS?
Early 80s, mid 80s?
Yeah.
That's, DOS 3.3 was the best.
Yeah, I actually thought DIDR-DOS was, but apparently MS-DOS took over and, you know, never look back. So, DOS.
They'll be able to build a company around that.
It's already done. So denial of service, and I guess can happen in many forms. I forgot our anniversary last year. There was about a 6 month denial of service. But the one here for DDoS is a distributed denial of service. So the point of that is that so if I'm DOSing Kirk, I'm just going to attack him.
You're not talking about the anniversary thing, are you?
No, I'm not.
No. Okay, cool.
No. It's been more than 6 months for you.
You can keep DOSing me then.
DDoS is when I attack Kirk from many locations, and a 3DOS is where I attack him at many different layers. So I'll attack the network stack, but then I'll also attack the application as well. And this
I'm finding this example a bit uncomfortable, actually. We should have talked about this before.
We should have done, eh? Is this the... Was it the going up the stack or the different layers? Which bit, actually... remember, new audience, we... Oh, man.
Some things are best not left.
I know. Well, hey, look, we might have already crossed the line, in which case we might as well just have fun now, because they're not going to ask us back next year, are they? So, okay, forget it. Let's go crazy.
So this was a language competition site, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
So school kids could answer questions about different languages and prove that they'd done their study.
Absolutely.
And then they ran a competition last
10 days in May. Absolutely. And so what actually happened is that for some reason, this Language Perfect Schools website, so it's been used by schools in New Zealand and Australia, within hours of it launching, it actually comes under a massive DDoS attack or distributed denial of service attack. Takes it offline in the first few hours. We, as a small plug, were actually brought in, brought the site back after 4 hours, and it then stayed up the other sort of 9.5 days. But that's another story. But while it was SD under attack, so the network layer, so at its peak, it had 1.5 million network connections were being made per second. So that was what, flooding the network layer. It ranked to over 500 meg of traffic coming through. And in 10 days, it had 200 billion network connection attempts were made on the site. Plus, it had the full layer 7, so it had scanners crawling it, looking for security vulnerabilities. It was going through searches, password brute forcing. So it was a fairly diverse attack against what you'd think was a fairly simple little website. But one of the things, so it did stay up. It did survive extremely well. And so for a chocolate bar, the Minister of Education at the time raved about what a great success it was, talking about the political side of life. And this fella here. Anyone know the amazing double life of this fella? Midnight Oil. Who said Midnight Oil over there? Oh, absolutely. Again. Jeez.
It's crunchy, they bounce well.
Oh, that's all good. That's all good. And the fella in front of you is texting, so I nearly killed him, but that's all right. So, You give him chocolate for texting. They're all just going, oh, forget that now. great. Love Aussie politics. And I guess the last bit, so before we get into live demo land, we cannot forget the one from last year over with TechEd New Zealand.
Oh, this is embarrassing.
So, again, not Microsoft's fault. We have to say that, or otherwise we get marched in the room quite quickly. It was nothing to do with Microsoft. It just happened to be the TechEd website. But that was all right. It was developed by someone else for them. So this was great. So last year in TechEd New Zealand, and we have actually had that okay with the TechEd New Zealand crowd, Microsoft New Zealand crowd. So down the bottom, you got this email that said, click here to print your barcode for quick access to the TechEd New Zealand event. And when you clicked that link, it would go to HTTPS, so it's secure, /secure, so it's even got secure in the URL. It's obviously really secure. .esp, that's fine. So anyway, you look at the URL, ID equals 673, that's interesting. Yada, 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 key equals. So I guess, for Mr. Kirk Jackson from Zero, when he saw QUFRU2DDI, did that trigger something in your mind?
It rang a small bell, yeah.
Now, why would it have rung a small bell?
Well, I use a password safe, so every time I sign up to a new site, I generate a new password, and that was my password.
Oh, so hang on. QUFRU2DDI is your password. So you go, oh man, plain text password failure. They email your password. What was really interesting is that quite quickly a bunch of smart fellows kind of went, hang on a moment, what's that? Let's look at that URL. That URL defines you uniquely in the database and looks up your ticket. ID equals, so you go, well, that must be ID as my user ID. And then the key, set my password. What was interesting is that 673 was the ID for the TechEd event. All right. So what else actually uniquely defines me as a user? Oh, the key. Whoa, they actually used your password as the key in the database to look you up. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So if you happen to put your password as TechEd2012, password, I love you, Fluffy Bunny, then, of course, there were multiple clashes, and so you had people finding other people's stuff.
Yeah, people were following the links and seeing other people's registration details.
That was quite unique. We've seen plain text passwords, but not them being used as a key in the database to look you up. So that was quite cool. In Microsoft defense, Avenue's got a severe beating and fixed that within hours, funnily enough. But again, so we're highlighting here that a lot of security issues that we see aren't actually relevant to the systems you're writing. It's actually going to be the systems that some numpty in marketing said, let's use that third-party vendor. And it's absolutely nothing under your control whatsoever.
And the other thing is it's not just big US companies that get attacked. As you saw, it's a lot of companies in Australia that get attacked. Places where we work, I mean, assuming we have no morals, we might be working for the tax office. And these attacks could happen to software that we write.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So really we have to think about the different ways that our systems can be attacked. And I guess that's what we're going to do
now.
A little bit of now.
Yes, we are. So what we're going to do now, so we're now going to do some wheedling and some cajoling. So we've done some, stuff's broken.
Sitting in the scene.
Yeah, so now we get serious. Or did we start serious?
We started serious.
Either way. Yep. So we're going to do some wheedling and cajoling, which is going to involve some demos. And so this is the bit where we have the two of us here with two machines, because I can guarantee that stuff will break. But the first demo, before I flick over to Kirk, have you just flicked over? Oh, it's over to you now. That's it.
You no, keep talking.
Okay.
Oh, you've got a reminder. You've got a bus to the airport coming soon.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
Cool. Can I close that?
Yeah, you can. That's fine.
Cool. Okay.
No, it's over on you. It's on your screen. I'm going to go over here and press your button then.
don't touch my buttons. So the first kind of attacks that I'll talk about are denial of service attacks. So we talked about the language perfect one, which was kind of a network based denial of service. They did go up to the application layer. But a lot of the ones that I've seen lately have been where it's the actual application that's being used legitimately that by an attacker that's causing the server to melt down or the network in your server environment to break or something like that. So different ways that your application can kind of melt down. If you've got a database connection leak on a particular page in your site and someone requests that page 100 times, it might use up your whole pool of connections and then no legitimate users can connect to the database anymore. Maybe you've got a file upload thing that writes to disk. So if I just write a few files, it'll fill up your hard drive and web servers tend to get unhappy when the C drive's full.
Well, that's where you get the zips of doom, where you modify a zip file to say it's actually 3 terabytes of a text file containing zeros, modify the header, and so upload a tiny little zip file, but as soon as it gets uncompressed on the server, it just goes...
Fills up the whole server. Yeah, we did a demo of that a few years ago. It can get quite messy to demo that.
So I must admit, the denial of service break here application demos are the ones we now learn to do last. In hindsight, you'd think that was quite obvious. Yeah. When you go, oh, look, this really crashes. Oh, crap. Quiet.
CPU, so say you've got a section in your application that's doing some funky calculations, generating reports, running lots of CPU-intensive operations. If someone requests that page 10 times, maybe they'll use up every core on every server in your web farm and no legitimate traffic will get through. No, nothing will be able to run. Same with RAM, if you've got memory leaks, if you've got stuff that does lots of reflection or lots of XML, you know, loading into memory, threads. And then I guess the standard kind of network bandwidth or bandwidth inside your hosting environment, you know, making lots of chatty connections between your database and your web server and flooding that connection. So I'll show you some simple examples. So the cool thing about these demos is these demos are all 2 lines of code running in, what version is this?
2010.
Cool, Visual Studio 2010. So pretty cutting edge. I think you'll agree that not many demos you've seen at TechEd revolve around 2 lines of C# and the previous version of the software. But
you're pretty well talking this up. This is good.
Yeah, I'm talking it up. So the first category of attacks we'll talk about is XML attacks. So lots of web apps deal with parsing content. So uploading files and checking if they're valid images, uploading Word documents and pulling the metadata out of them, like, you know, it's like a SharePoint style thing. Web services where, you know, XML is being sent to your web server and it has to parse the XML and expand it. Jason, you know that guy Jason. So parsing is a very common thing that happens in your app. So this is a very simple application. it's a web form app. The user browses to a file, create an XML document, and then load the uploaded file into the XML document. So hopefully you can follow what's happening in this application. I won't tell you how long it took me to write this.
That was pretty much most of last night, wasn't it, eh?
Yeah.
The debugging took ages.
So here's an XML file that I'll open. Open with... So you'll see it's a very simple XML file. And I'll just send that to the server. And as you expect, it loads it into the XML document, and then you've got that XML document in memory, and then you can like iterate over it and look at nodes and, you know, all the kind of stuff that people enjoy doing with XML if they're masochists. So what if the XML file had been constructed in a malicious way? So let's have a look at another XML file that I've got here called Boom. So I'll do it with Notepad again. This time I'm going to increase the font. So this is known as the billion laughs attack. So I'll explain a little bit of how it works. So XML has a whole bunch of other features that you don't typically use. One of them is you can define your own entities. So in my XML here, I've got an entity called M that I've defined. Resize.
No, don't do that. You'll break it.
Okay, hopefully you can see that now. So I've got an entity called M. And when the XML document loads into memory, .NET goes, well, there's this thing called M, but I don't know what it is. I better look it up. And at the top of the document, I've defined some doc types, and I've said that the entity M is 8 L's. So that's cool. And then the XML thing goes, well, what are L's? And it goes, oh, they're 8 K's. So it replaces all of those 8 L's with 64 K's. Hey, this is where your maths is going to come in. Bring up a calculator. And then for each of those K's, it in turn substitutes them for what K is defined with. So now it's got 64 times 8 J's times 8 I's times 8 H's times 8 G's. So as you can see, this XML document, were you to expand it into memory, would probably take a bit of space. Go away, menu. So let's open this up. So the cool thing about this kind of example is, you know, most of your web servers will have a few threads, a few cores. One person will do something bad, and you'll see a CPU jump up on your web server, and you go, that's a little bit weird, but a while later it goes away. But if the user goes and does it four times, all of a sudden your web server is unresponsive. So let's watch that load my XML file. Come on, Billy. Okay, so here's my web server process here. Okay, it's up to 94% CPU and 234 meg of memory. And basically, that's just going to keep going until it gets to the billion mark when it's fully expanded, that document. How much code have you got that takes an XML file and opens it? Like, everyone has code that does this, right?
Well, it's basically the first thing you do. Oh, I've got an XML file. Let's open it and start to parse it.
Yeah, so this is an entity expansion attack. It's a very common one. Pretty much any time I'm reviewing an app that takes XML, I'll try chucking a few of these things in. So I just had to kill that, which is hopefully my computer recovers. Luckily, in newer versions of .NET, so .NET 4, and you can tell it's .NET 4 because I've reskinned the application. Ready? Oh. Anyway.
Something seems to have killed your machine, mate.
Yeah, I don't know. Someone's denied service to my machine.
Freaky, dude.
I thought I killed that.
Yes, yes. Very well.
It's being busy being idle. Anyway, so in .NET 4...
oh, there you go.
Now it's got protection for this. This particular attack. So now when I try and load a big document into memory, it'll try for a while, and then when it reaches a certain size, it'll stop with an exception. And so this exception is the input document has exceeded a limit set by max characters from entities. So this is an example of where the framework's evolving to help protect you against attacks. Now, there's heaps of different attacks that you can do with XML. So if you're building apps with XML, I recommend you look at the OWASP site or look around on the web for XML attacks. So there's different attacks where you can, you know how I had the entities in that file, I can say, you know, ampersand M expands to this file on disk. And so I can upload an XML file to the server that points to, c/autoexec.bat. Okay, I might be showing my age there.
Web.config
and the website, whatever. And then as the XML loads into memory on the server, it expands the entity, loads that file into the XML, and potentially gives it access to that file to the attacker.
So you mentioned the OWASP. So just checking the people over this side of the ditch. People have heard of OWASP. We've got some takers. Just for those who haven't, if you're doing web dev, Open Web Application Security Project. So check out OWASP.org. So if you're doing any banking or PCI stuff, that's all referring to the OWASP top 10 vulnerabilities. So if you're doing any web security stuff, OWASP can definitely be a resource to check out.
Another one that I see a fair bit is developers using regular expressions. And you've all heard the old joke about, You had a problem, so you thought you'd use a regular expression, so now you're lonely and living alone. But was that the joke? Something like that.
I liked it.
So we use regular expressions all the time in our code because it's a nice, simple way to effectively make a little parser for some input.
Unfortunately, other than those people who live alone, no one really understands what it does at all.
No, so what they do is they make this, the regular expression compiles into a finite state machine that evaluates the input.
Which, of course, why would you not from a string of garbage?
And goes through your input character by character looking for a match. And so here's a really simple regular expression. This is matching any string that's comprised of digits. So digits plus means one or more. So when this is matching the string 1, 2, 3, the first thing it does is it matches one and moves its little placeholder up to, you know, just past one, so that's matched. Then it matches two, yep, that's also a digit. Then it matches three, and it goes, I've reached the end of the input, my string matches, woohoo, I'm happy. If I put a bad character on the end of my input, you'd expect this wouldn't work because my regular expression doesn't allow X's in it. But what the regular expression machine does is it starts at the beginning again, matches the first character, then the second character, then the third character, and goes, hang on, I can't do X. I need to go back and try again. So it takes off the last one that it matched and says, okay, put 3 back on the stack and try again. But there's no alternative in my regular expression. I'm only allowed digits, so I can't try again. So it basically has to unwind and go, this failed. So that goes on for a little while, but it stops. For a more complicated regular expression like this, where the only real difference is that it's got the brackets capturing the digits and saying you can have more than one set of digits, it pretty much matches the same way, right? With simple input. So it matches the 1, then the 2, then the 3, and it's good. But with bad input, the behavior is different. So now it matches the 1, stores that in a group, matches the 2, puts it in the same group, matches the 3, puts it in the same group, and goes, I can't match the X, so I need to go back a little bit. So it gives back the 3 to the stack and tries again. There's an alternative that it can use. It can make a new group with a 3 in it. So it puts a 3 in another group, and then it tries to match the X again. Still can't do it, so put the 3 back. There's no alternative, so it puts the 2 back, makes a new group with the 2 in it, and then winds back because the X doesn't match and tries making a new group. And you can see that this backtracking behavior is causing a lot more effort to happen in this regular expression execution. So I'll show you... Show you my awesome two-line demo. So here's a website I prepared earlier. So this is just a simple web forms page. It's got a text box. It's got a validation control, which is running server-side, that has a regular expression. And you'll probably be pretty familiar with this if you've been around and done ASP.NET programming. There's a bunch of regular expressions out of the box that come in the picker. And so this, at the moment, is just going to match an email address. And just in case you don't believe me, it'd be a real shame if my two-line demo didn't work, because that would really show that I don't know how to program. So if I put in something that's not an email address, it says boo-hoo, and if I put in something that matches the syntax of that regular expression, then it says yay, and the regex runs. So that regex is probably fine, but what if we took that regular expression that I had before and shoved that in my control? So just find it. So that was this one. Darn it, excuse me. So if I change the regular expression on this control to that one that does lots of backtracking, which was that digit matching one. So obviously you wouldn't really use a digit matching regular expression to match email addresses. Your users would probably get upset pretty quickly. Anyway, so this, for good input, this runs fine. For bad input, like I talked about, it'll be doing a bit of backtracking, but it also runs fine. The interesting thing is when the input is almost good but slightly bad, things get slower, so... Oh, that wasn't too bad.
a little bit slower.
Taking longer.
Oops.
So if you had this regular expression in your website, if someone typed, it's probably like a 30 character string, it just took maybe 10 seconds to run.
Oh dear.
Say someone typed that into the email address box on your website. This regular expression is going to run pretty much forever, backtracking, because each extra character doubles the amount of work it has to do in backtracking. So it's not using lots of memory, so that's good, I guess, but it's using lots of CPU. So lots of our apps use regular expressions in them to parse stuff, to validate. And you've kind of got this security by obscurity. Like, people probably don't know what your regular expression is, so they probably wouldn't know how to craft the input that breaks it. But what happens if, in your ASP.NET app, if you're doing a regular expression validation on the client side, which is like a built-in feature? So now, when I use my app, it's actually running in JavaScript the regular expression. It's not sending the data to the server and running it there. And in JavaScript, you can actually see the regular expressions that are in there. Excuse me while I scroll. So now an attacker can look at the source code of your web page, and they know that on your server side, if they give that input, it's going to chew up CPU on your server. So if you're using regular expressions, you need to watch out for this. So this is another example of the application style denial of service attack. So here's a few different examples of them. So pretty much what you're looking for in your regular expressions is alternation and repetition nested. So that simple example we had at the top had repetition repeated, repetition repeated, alternation with repetition repeated, because that means that you've got kind of this squared approach where the regular expression engine has to run through the string and then go back and run through it again and go back and run through it again and go back. So that's what you need to watch out for. There's also, of course, lots of other application things you can do to cause denial of service attacks in your app. I find the most effective one that I've written myself is an infinite loop. But hopefully you're a little bit more savvy than me at writing your code.
Well, that goes down for about 99.9% of devs.
Cool. So so that's application level denial of service. So now let's talk about other security issues that you
other
might see in
apps. Other
hacky
stuff. So I guess, it's cool. So I guess what I want to do is now jump over to, I guess when Kirk and I were divvying up the demos, I took the hackhead half and he took the one he's just done. So it's good to see that your two lines of code apparently took you weeks to develop. That's what he told me, because I came up with a whole freaking website. So
I had a website.
Socially engineered. Oh yeah, exactly. So I guess for this bit, so what I want to do is just demo and just show lots of different generic security issues that we see in the wild, lots and lots and lots. Hopefully, a bunch of them you guys will be familiar with. Just as a quick intro into this. So this website is designed. You can log in and do stuff. The point of it, it's written in .NET obviously has a SQL Server database at the back end, and it's one of these sites where you would log in and see lists of sessions that are happening at an event like this one. This doesn't actually happen to be the events of this conference.
There's too many.
So what I'll do to kind of walk through. So the first one I want to show is we see lots of sites that are flipping in and out of HTTPS. So in this day and age, as a rule of thumb, just if anything is taking any private data, personal data, anything they want secure, just take it over HTTPS. It's so easy these days. We still see sites flipping in and out of. So as an example, so a bit of HTTPS session hijacking to Nick stuff. So what I'm going to do, right, first of all, let me just log into this website. And so what I'm going to do, first of all, let me just log into this website as Andy Proud. Ain't a really strong password. Bing. Cool. So it says, hey, Groovy, welcome, Andy Proud. So that's fine. So we know who we are. So what I'm going to do, poof. I'm first of all going to run my browser through a local proxy. So if anyone's doing any web security stuff, you should be quite familiar with this kind of approach. You run a local proxy, run your own web traffic through it. It's also the sort of thing that you might do if you're capturing someone else's web traffic, say if you were using a shared public Wi-Fi that wasn't encrypted, like a in-room Wi-Fi or something along those lines.
That's Microsoft sort of thing. Event.
Exactly. That's the sort of thing that where you would sit there and just capture lots and lots of HTTP traffic. So if you're on a wireless that isn't encrypted, you can usually just capture all of the other traffic that's floating around. You just put your wireless card in promiscuous mode and just go and surf other people's stuff. So all the time they're browsing over HTTPS, that's fine. But what happens if they're not? So what I'm going to do, so this is my burp, burp is our proxy of choice. So what I'm going to do is just run my local browser through Burp just to show you the example. So what happens now?
You can also use Fiddler for this, which is a free one. Burp you have to pay for. But Burp's got other kind of web attack tools in it, as well as being a proxy.
Cool.
Which is why we like to use it.
So I'm running over HTTPS. I've accepted my proxy cert. So what it does mean is that I can see down here the traffic that's flying past. That's beautiful. Okay? Ah. Yeah, that's fine.
Start it again. You'll notice that Burp is written in Java.
Yeah, which I think is actually a pretty unstable platform. Yeah. So that's really good. So I like it when the demo gods actually kill the app within around the first 12 seconds of running. But that's fine. We're all good. Nah, that's fine. Delete that. Crikey Maluma. And that's off. Ding, ding. So what I have here is a tool called Burp. It's a local proxy.
You've done this already.
Oh, yeah, sorry, buddy. So what I'm going to do, let me just try that again. Go over there. Yeah, I understand the risks. Yeah, that's fine. If I wasn't
so the reason it's doing this is because Burp is generating a fake SSL certificate so it can decrypt his traffic going between his browser and the real web server.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's what that was doing.
So what I'm going to do, so over HTTPS at the moment. So imagine now I am sitting elsewhere surfing your traffic. Now, although I am successfully intercepting this HTTPS traffic, if you've ever run something like Wireshark to sniff network traffic and you've sniffed wireless traffic, you'll see HTTPS traffic is absolutely secure, unbreakable. You can't see what it is. So what I'm going to do is log into the site, as we had before. Andy Brow, that looks like me. Yes.
I think your password was AAAAA.
No. One down there, Zeds, mate.
Oh, there's Zeds.
Okay. So that's cool. So everything's over HTTPS. So imagine now all of these requests are things I cannot see if I wasn't outside of this proxy. But what the site does, I can also link over here, poof, to the HTTP version of my site. And say, for instance, now I'm merrily logged in, I'm going around, and all I've done is just gone to one page. It could be a request for a CSS, it could be a request for an image, but I've now just gone to access something over HTTP, and then I hop home again to my HTTPS site. That's all I did, nothing special. Now, if you're not careful, the sort of thing that can happen here is over HTTP, I only loaded an image. So why would I care about going over HTTP to load an image? Well, what I'm just highlighting down the bottom of the screen here, and for those who are sitting down the bottom, you get the best view of anything that's not actually on the screen. But so the stuff that's just there, I'll scroll it up for you to give you a slightly better view. So what we're seeing here is some of the information that would be transferred over an HTTP, over HTTP. For instance, stuff like the session ID and our ASPX auth token. So as an example, just by making one request, so this is now flown in the wild, so if I'm watching your HTTP traffic, sniffing the wireless, so this would be the sort of traffic that you don't want someone else to nick. Because all I need to do is if I fire up again, how about we go for another? So we'll do a new private window. I would be using IE at the moment. That's all I'm going to say. I would be using it because I should. So if we go to readybaghackhead.com. So it's why is that ticking? That's broken.
So all an attacker would need to do is watch that cookie going over HTTP and insert it into their own session, and they can log in as Andy. But obviously Andy's code has some issues. Maybe you're already in a private window?
Bro! Jesus, how come you made the smart decision?
If you'd used Internet Explorer, this would never have happened.
No, that's a good point. Tell you what I'm going to do, right? Woo! Let me... So imagine instead I've got a... Shush. So it should be just in a normal new window. Ay, ay, ay. Sometimes it's the demo god, sometimes it's just...
You know what I have to work with here?
So, aha, look, I'm not me. Well, okay. So what we'll do for this one. So this is my non-me session.
This
so
is
if
the bad
I'm
guy.
Now... Sorry?
The bad guy.
Yes, the bad guy. So I've got one window over here that is my real guy, being Andy Prowl, and I have my other window here, which is my... hopping around the place, which is my not.
You're doing an awesome job of the alt tabbing there.
Do you like it? So all I'm going to do here is just... So this is just a little quick one at the beginning. Crikey. Here we go. So all I'm going to do is just refresh this session. What I've done, though, is I am just intercepting the request coming through. Have I just taken the right window? Have I just taken the wrong window? Ay, ay, ay. Continue through. Right, let's just try that one again. So this is my one. I'm not logged into this window. Do the login. Enter it there. This should be where I can. Poof. There we go. So all I've done in that very long, obfuscated way, and so this is where the demo should work properly, is all I've done is captured the HTTP session token and the ASPX auth token while the session was outside of HTTPS, replayed it in here, and what we should hope to see is kind of what we saw before. Yay! Where my hacker session is now logged in as Andy Prowl. So that's simple session hijacking, and so there's a bunch of .NET settings that you need to put in place to not have things like session tokens and ASPX auth tokens sent over non-HTTPS. But so that's that. So if you don't know the settings to turn on, so that's some of the issues. When we see sites hopping in and out, you don't have to have the mentality that says, it's only my credit card details and login credentials that need to be over HTTPS. The rest of my site doesn't have to be. Stuff like the session tokens and auth travels with every request as well.
I guess 10 years ago, people didn't like to use SSL or HTTPS for all their traffic because it was expensive to compress. And they'll say to pay for certificates. But these days, certificates are cheap and CPU is cheap. And you've really got to do it. We've actually got a cheat sheet of little tips that you can turn on in ASP.NET and SharePoint and MVC, which is on our hack-ed.com site. So if you want to go and see the cookie settings that you should turn on, that'll be a good place.
Yep, absolutely.
There'll be a link at the end.
All right, let's whip through some other examples of stuff. So look, some of the bits that we talked about before. So SQL injection is obviously... around and prevalent, and people are still being owned by it. So,
yeah, but we built this site using what do we use? Link to SQL.
Yep.
So the good thing about using an ORM is that you don't handwrite any SQL.
Absolutely.
So the chances of an attacker getting SQL injection much lower.
So we tend to not write any SQL. However, this website does have one bit of handcrafted SQL. Any guesses where the most common places that you will find handcrafted SQL is? There's a subtle hint. Where? Aha, very good.
Can you throw it to that gentleman?
Why do I have to throw it?
Because I can't throw.
Backhand. Oh!
Wow.
Thank you.
You see,
yeah, nice.
You know, if this presenting and security gig doesn't work out, you'd be a great chocolate bar thrower.
Excellent. Yay, that's quite exciting, actually. So for a bit of very basic SQL injection, a lot of the time people say...
we'll show it working properly first.
Okay, so first of all, I have an incredibly extended search box for the purpose of putting in some rather complex search queries. But the first thing I might want to do is search for some sessions. So the purpose of this page, it does a legitimate query at the back end, and it will search for sessions that are contained in the database of things that contain the word SQL. Make sense? Sounding good so far.
So the places where I see people handcrafting SQL is when they're sorting. Or when they're generating light queries, or any time they need to concatenate bits together. So this one here, you can sort by time and title. So the stored proc has to have, you know, some dynamic part of it that changes the order by clause.
And that's a very good point that you just made. So this is a stored proc. So for anyone that says, look, I'm non-SQL injectable because I'm using stored procs. So again, this is SQL injection through a stored proc. And so for any of those people that go, that's impossible, then we're happy to show you at the end how you can create a SQL injectable stored proc.
And believe me, people know how to do it.
Oh, yes, they do. You find them all the time. So of course, what happens with that SQL injection is things happen where people pass in, for instance, quotes. Oh, crikey, it broke. But this, of course, would be Cardinal Security Sin 101. So anytime that you are spewing error messages on the screen of your web apps, then that's obviously bad. So Cardinal Sin number one is that whenever you don't handle all of your issues, or exceptions, then what happens is you're basically using your exception screen as a debugger. So we'll look at a minute as an example where that's quite interesting. What it's actually done is returned something out of the database for me, but then has used that in the thing that's broken. So anyway, let's just take it. I put in my single quote and it broke. Okay?
So if you're an attacker and you see this, so you might see the exception come up on the screen and go, whoa, if I put a single quote in, that's bad, and it's giving me an exception. That's probably SQL injection. But even if it just gives you a 500 error with a nice friendly, oops, something went wrong, you still know that you're running code against the database because you got an error as opposed to proper results.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. And so I guess, so what will happen is, and so anyone know the technique, so if it's not spewing an error on the page, but the site appears to be SQL injectable, there's a very common technique that we'll use to still compromise the attack even if there's no error message. If I'm not able to see what's happening, I'm blind to it. What's the common attack?
This is a bit labored.
I know, okay. It is.
Blind
SQL injection. Very good. Blind SQL injection. So anyway, we do whatever. So so what happens? So without going too far into the idiosyncrasies of SQL injection, all that happens, you can see if I end my SQL query with a double dash, that's cool. So it's changed the way things work. It's now only finding things that end with SQL. That's cool. So what would happen as an attacker would usually have something like SQL map. It would have they would have lots of pre-built queries. So run you through some examples of the sort of things that we will often do or see. You might start to do strange queries like that. So what queries like that do is it's saying, for instance, basically it's using the app as a debugger. So the errors presented to the user are starting to describe the table structure. So that's fine. So attackers will actually use different SQL injections to identify what's going on.
And tools like SQL map can generate these input strings and basically build up the schema of your database.
Absolutely.
By looking at the error messages they get back. So find all the table names, find all the column names.
You get strangers on SQL queries. So again, so what happened here? So things a minute ago in the results were telling us the names of columns. You can write different queries that will now tell you the types. So I've now got the error message starting to say the types are failing, but what it's also doing is again spewing the contents. So this is where, so the SQL injection basically will run through and be able to interrogate the full layout of your database. So this gets us into another common area of what we call security misconfiguration, where things are running with privileges they shouldn't. So we have seen in the wild a couple of times where people are using the SA in SQL Server running the DBO schema. So basically the database is
who
now
does
running.
That? Yeah. It's so much easier.
We've seen a few. Well, that's just it. That's
creating
just
a it. Database uses
stuff
hard.
Works. It's like locking it down is a pain, and it kind of works. And I had to rush and break all the security to get it live. And now it's live.
And who knows, sometimes your web app might want to create tables on the fly.
Well, it might do. Exactly so. Yeah. So, and I guess there's that mantra that says, well, I didn't secure it, but it's not broken, so I don't need to fix it. Security is broken. So I guess, so what are we doing here? So this is a slightly different attack, where what we're doing instead is using the page to do things it wasn't expected to. So we're doing things like getting the search results but unioning with something else that we might have access to. So in this scenario, tables like sysobjects, syscolumns would be the sorts of things that an attacker might go after if your database isn't running with the right lockdown permissions. So say as a DBO schema, I have permission to look at it. So what's it doing? So basically here I have, I'll have one valid answer. This is my SQL panel Q&A. That's one valid answer. What I've done is I've unioned the contents of sysobjects. And so my web page thinks it's validly returned all of the sessions that are happening at this event, whereas in fact they're not. So if you look at ASP.NET schema versions, ASP.NET membership.
That sounds like a really boring ticket session.
Like a whole hour and a quarter on ASP.NET membership. So
be careful, there might actually be a session.
Oh, crap, is there? Is there one on there? Yikes. If they're not, we'll scrub that. Let's just grab that. Schwing. So,
isn't that
different things? No. Nah. So say there are, so this one here, what I've instead done is use syscolumns for the website to now tell me what are all the columns that exist in the database. So this is where Originally, they were just attacking the table that their search query works on. Now what we're doing is expanding that and just using our SQL injection to interrogate the whole database. What's everything everywhere? So as we can see, ASP.NET membership contains things like failed password attempts, and we'll have the password hashes in there. So that's cool. So we would expand this kind of attack, and what we would do is we say, well, okay, let's say, for instance, we want to find out the list of users that exist in the database. Out of those users, oh, look, these are all the people that exist. These are all the people in our database. Lovely.
They look like real people. They're not real people.
No, they're
they?
Not real people.
Okay, good.
No one's a real person. So what about if we've got this Andy Prowl user? So we know that he exists. So we're doing a target attack. Remember, at the moment,
if you look up here, we're not actually logged in as anyone.
So we're trying to find the people that we're interested in. So one of them I've seen is an admin on the system, fellow Andy Prowl. We come along and, boff, start to get out Andy's information. Cool. So what about if I now get out the Andy's user ID, or indeed, what I might want to do instead is get out things like, here's one I prepared earlier. So that this, for instance, would be my password. Well, actually, it wouldn't. So that would be a salted SHA-1 hash of my password. So this is where we can see like .NET Forms Auth is using salted SHA-1 hashes. So that's the hash of my password. So that's cool. So we go, okay, I can't get Andy's password out. Maybe I could run it through a hash breaker. Maybe I could update Andy's password with my password after I've self-registered in the system.
No.
So there's things that you could do to try and break in. So let's look at some of the attacks that we might want to put in place. So what I'm going to do instead, right, before I do that. So in the good old days, you were also able to do things like, when I say in the good old days, so back in
2007.
So SQL's always been beautiful of the XP command shell. So people there familiar with the XP command shell?
Don't use that. Out there. It's
so evil. The XP command shell was beautiful. It was, came out in SQL 2005, I'm going to bet, but some of you guys might know different. And
it's got to be older than that.
You reckon?
Yeah.
SQL 2000.
It's got XP in it, so that's that's Windows XP,
oh,
right?
Dude. Okay.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with the extended procedures. So so basically the command shell is something that was actually written for you to be able to run commands on the SQL server itself. So it's a pretty genius idea from a hacking perspective. But what happens these days is that, as you can see here, it's turned off, and it's been turned off by administrators. So I'm kind of buggered. But the interesting thing is that although it's turned off by default these days, what happens if we happen to be running as a privileged user for our database connection? So remember that database connection, we're not even logged into the website yet. We're not running, so we're connecting to the database as whoever is the owner of the worker process or however it's we've been configured to auth to the database. So what happens here? So I've just run a command at the back end that didn't break. So what did I do? I ran an spconfigure of call show advanced options. Well, what does show advanced options do? Show advanced options through a basic SQL connection, connecting through as a SA account. Let me just run my XP command shell again. So before my error broke, because it said, you haven't got stuff turned on, what is it now doing? Oh, no, still being turned off by, so for those who are watching closely, the error message has slightly changed. So this one I have down here is, I am running the configure to, okay, that seems to be working. What again if I, via SQL injection, via my website, again, change the actual configuration of the SQL server itself, still appears to be fairly happy. Now, let me go back and see if I can run my DIR of the C drive. Stuff didn't break. All right. So somewhere buried deep in the back bowels of our database, something ran a DIR of the C drive. So that would be useful if, so through some mulling around and having a look at our website, maybe we've realized that it does actually have HTTPS really bad hackad / DIRC.txt. Oh, nope, don't have one of those. So what happens if instead I decide to go and run that at the back end and write it out too? So this is something that I've done some, and I'll show you how in a minute. So you see I've got the physical path of the website. Poof. So how about if I do something like running a DIR of the C drive and actually write it out to the web root of our website? Ooh. Oh, that's handy. So what do I now have? So my website is now providing me the ability to run any arbitrary command line at the back end and dump the input out on the page. Interesting. Interesting. So I guess probably what we'll just do is the last one. So if I just do the last two there before I move on. So let's just say we run this search instead. Yeah, tell you what I'll do. So we've seen, so this one here, it would list the users that are on the machine. I'll be able to create another user and have a look at who they are. So I guess, so I'll leave this one here at the moment. And the expediency of time, we're down to our last
five-minute
window. So what I'm just going to do is run through one slightly different example before we leave. CSRF. Who's heard of CSRF these days? So CSRF is becoming more prevalent. So let's make it a bit easy. Cross-site scripting. So who's heard of cross-site scripting, first of all? That should be pretty much everyone because cross-site scripting is prevalent anywhere. So cross-site request forgery, CSRF, is this is one that we're finding more and more prevalent in many, many sites. So what I'm going to do, right, as a quick wrap, let me log in as Kirk Gone Bad.
Nice.
Yeah, that's you, buddy. So what I'm going to do, Kirk Gone Bad, boff. So if we just come through to, say, for instance, SQ coding practices. Let's go look at what's new in .NET security. Oof. So what we can see here, so this is quite an interesting one, that what we've got is a bunch of these feedbacks posted by loads of people about how much they love this session. So either people love the session or who knows. But let's look at the last entry. The entry was done back on, so there's nothing here by Mr. Kirk. Yeah? Right. So normally what you would have to do is, I've gone bad. I've got 2 minutes, I can do this. Boof! Okay, that's you leaving a comment. Alternatively, Kirk could have gone to view my homepage. So this is Andy Prowse's profile. Andy Prowse's homepage itself, boof. So let's pop that up. So Andy Prowse's homepage is on a different website, badhackhead.com. So remember, we're on really bad hackhead. This is just bad hackhead. It's HTTP, it's an HTML page, and that's this. Can I suggest that you leave me some great feedback, Cobber? So like that, Corba.
Was that how you regionalised it?
Yeah, bro.
Australia.
Okay. Yeah, I know. Well, like, because normally I just do the bro.
Yeah.
Oh, bro, true. So so this is the Corba. So if we come back to... So what did the cross-site request for you do? So remember, all Kirk did is had a look at my homepage. Oh, crap. And at that point...
So what's
he left me some great feedback.
When I viewed his homepage, yeah. Some feedback got written onto the session. So how did that happen?
But it didn't actually action. No, that just broke.
Did it?
Yeah. Because what happens here is that via you viewing my homepage, we come through and you've just left me a brand new comment. That was a really cool demo, wasn't it?
It was.
Oh, it actually didn't work. So, okay.
So the idea of cross-site request forgery is it's tricking a user into doing something they're already allowed to do. Yeah. So when I'm using this Hackhead site, I'm allowed to put comments on pages. But when I visit your website or the attacker's website, I'm still allowed to put comments on the pages in the Hackhead site because I'm still logged into it. But my browser is on a different website. So if I go to this other website and it's got a form that posts back to the Hackhead site, then that post back will go along with my cookies, it'll be logged in, and it'll write the comments on there.
Yeah, well, there we go. Hey. So that's the way the cross-site request forgery works, and had that worked, that would have been really cool, and you would have seen the thing at the end.
You know what, Andy?
Yes?
I reckon we don't get to talk enough.
Why are you putting on the romantic jazzy music?
I think it's time for some jazz talk. If anyone's got any questions, feel free to fire them out now. But you know, Andy, I've really enjoyed our time together today.
So have I. So, thank you very much.
Hey, Andy.
Yes, Kirk.
You know how you're talking about that denial of service with your wife?
Ah, yes. Are you really going to do that just because my demo didn't work at the end? Oh.
Hey, Andy.
Yes.
You know how you went for a walk on the beach the other morning?
Yes.
Romantic stroll.
A romantic stroll on the beach?
Yeah.
Yes.
When you walk in the sand, do you become Sandy Andy?
Really? Nah, yes, I became Sandy.
If you were holding a hammer,
yes,
walking on the sand, would you be Handy Sandy
Andy?
Oh,
no. Really? Nah, yes, I would be Kirk.
If you were holding a woman's hand named Mandy. Okay, is there any real questions?
Yeah. Well, look, it's 1 o'clock, it's 11 o'clock. Oh, it's 1 o'clock in New Zealand, look at that. It's 11 o'clock, so we're breaking for a bit of morning tea now. So you guys probably want to shoot off quite quickly and grab some morning tea before it goes.
And then come straight back, because we're back in here at half past?
We are. So the one we got at half past is your Spidey security sensors. So what we're going to be doing in half an hour's time for those people who want to come back, which may be an empty room, I'm not quite sure, is actually going to be how you recognise this kind of stuff going on in sites. So how do you recognise when sites are vulnerable to attack? See you back in half an hour. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.